Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night, a very special edition because this is officially our second in-person Ladies Night in a very, very long time, and it's with a very special person. Mary Mazur of Cobra Kai! Cobra Kai Season 5! How are we at Season 5 already?
I keep saying it feels like a high school time capsule where I kind of get to look at it now and I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, and then I go back and watch like Season 1 stuff, I'm like, oh, it's actually been like 5 years. That's wild.
I was even rewatching our last Ladies Night, and we had recorded that before Season 3 even came out. It was just when we had found out it was moving over to Netflix. It feels like a different time completely.
Yeah. No, these are two different timelines that's so weird. Just jumping in between.
So you've been on Ladies Night before, but when you were on Ladies Night, we did not have this glorious dice tower. So this is how we start the show now. Okay. So I've got 8 questions here. You get 3 rolls on the tower, and whatever you roll, that is where we start at least.
Okay. All right. I can do that.
Okay. So first, it's so weird seeing someone else roll.
This is gorgeous.
Yeah.
This might go missing.
Now someone can actually appreciate it too. No one's really looked at the dice super close.
This is so cool. Okay. So how do I not mess this up?
It should just go in there and then fall out into the grass. And it did. You have to read it though. I can't see it.
Okay. What am I reading? 3?
Yeah, that looks like a 3. That's a good question.
Okay, great. Yeah, I know numbers, guys.
All right, I like this one. This one is called High Low. Can you give us one audition high and one audition low and tell us what you learned from that low?
Oh, boy. Am I really about to say this story? I've kept this story in a box for so long in the very back of my mind. Yeah, okay, why not? I was 5 years old, and I auditioned for it's a Christmas movie. And it ended up doing very well. I'm not going to say what it was, but I was so excited about it and so nervous at the audition that I was like, you know, really tense or whatever. And then all the other kids started to play in the waiting room. And I was like, oh, I want to play. That looks fun. So I start playing. And I was like, we were playing with, I think somebody had brought Barbies. So we were like sitting there playing with Barbies in the waiting room of the audition. And then I get called in. And I am, when I get nervous, I have to go pee. And I didn't. I didn't go pee before the audition because I was busy playing with Barbies. And so I went into the audition room, and I got so nervous when they were like, okay, go ahead and start. And I literally peed just a little bit, but enough that I was like, and just ran out of the room. Oh my God. And I ran out to my mom, and I was like, Mommy. And she was like, what? What's wrong? So anyway, they let me go back in after taking my bathroom break. But yeah, that was definitely a low, and the lesson was go pee before the audition.
Yeah,
don't get distracted with Barbies. I just said that. Oh my God.
You were five.
I was 5.
That is a very reasonable thing to have happen. If I were 5, I would have been distracted by Barbies as well.
And then I get in there and it was like monologues of dialogue too for a 5-year-old to deliver. So that one had to be a low. I guess a high. Not even just saying this because, like, this genuinely is the high, was my final call for Cobra Kai. I got to, it was down to me and two other Samanthas, and I walked into the room for my, like, chemistry read, and I chem read with, I think it was initially three different Miguels, and then I went back again and read with two different Miguels, one of them being Sholo. And, but when I went in for the first chem read, after doing the boy chem read, I got to do the Ralph chem read and the Daniel moment, which was very, I was shaking. Like, I don't know how, I think they've since released that audition tape, but what they didn't release was they also had us do, they were like, just shoot the breeze, and we're just going to roll the cameras. And we joked about the fact that, like, nobody who was auditioning for any of the younger roles, like, knew what shoot the breeze meant. And so we started talking about that, and then we started talking about the fact that I was from Arkansas, and, like, all this, like, just casual conversation. And the entire time, like, I was, what I'm doing right now, word vomiting. Because when I get nervous, I just word vomit. And so I'm just word vomiting all over Ralph Macchio, and I'm just shaking. And I'm like, how am I keeping it together? I was not keeping it together. But it was like, but that's a high for me. Because I left that room being like, you know what, whatever happens, I had such a great time. And he was so kind and so welcoming. And I was like, it would be the coolest thing ever to get to do this job. But even if not, I got to just audition and read lines with Ralph Macchio. Like, What is my life?
I can't imagine walking away with a better headspace from any other, because I can't imagine what you guys go through with auditioning on a regular basis, because I am someone who's very sensitive. So to be able to process anything like that and walk away being like, I am satisfied with that experience alone and feel good about what I did no matter what happens next, is a very important mentality to have.
Yeah, that was very special.
Also, it just scrambled my brain as you explained that, like there were two other Sams and three other Miguels or something, like, I can't handle that thought anymore, because these characters are so your own.
That's the cool thing is, I mean, our writers are incredible at being at adapting and writing to these characters that we've kind of all co-created at this point. You know, I get to have a say, which is a really cool thing as a young actor, to be taken seriously and to be able to say, hey, you know, I don't feel like that's something Sam would say. And they're like, you're absolutely right. Like, how would you say it? And we can build off of each other, which is very cool and unique and special that they're so respectful of every different facet of what everybody's bringing to the table. So I think we've all kind of gotten to morph with these characters as we've gone, because it's funny, like, looking back at season one, Sam, like, yeah, I loved it. I was excited. I was in it. But there's certain things where I'm like, oh man, like, Sam from season five would never have, like, had that pool party and, like, just been like, whatever, dad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was just such a, like, it's so cool to, like, go back and kind of see that. But yeah, no, I mean, I feel like at this point, I am Sam. Sam is me. We joke that, like, it's me and then my stunt double, Selkie Holm, and my stand-in, Kayla, and the three of us, we walk around, we form a little phalanx, and we walk around and we go, I am Sam.
I love that so much. We're going to come back to her evolution in a little bit. But first, you have two more roles in the tower.
Okay. I'm less nervous this time. Is it a three again?
We need to do it again.
Okay, great.
Three is my lucky number, though, so that's good vibes.
Oh, is it?
Good
okay.
Vibes.
Five, two. But this one's two.
Five or two? Two.
Well, five's my lucky number.
Oh,
this
okay.
is two.
I feel like I should just let you pick a five. Oh, this one I like. So this one was inspired by a recent episode that I did for The Sandman. But
okay.
What is something that could be seemingly silly to someone else out there? Like a little thing in your life that makes you happy on a regular basis, even though it might not be something everybody else out there, like, values to the nth degree?
Ooh. You know, I've gotten really into, what's even the word, like, spin classes, like cycling. And I have always been like, I always struggled a lot with working out and the concept of exercise for the sake of, you know, for the sake, because what it was always to me internally was about image, and it was about vanity, and it was about not even vanity for, like, in a negative sense, but in a sense of, like, just feeling like I needed to do something in order to be liked, in order to fit in order to, you know, I would talk to people and they'd be like, oh yeah, this is my workout routine, and I wouldn't have one, and it would make me feel weird about it. But at the same time, like, the idea of working out felt like this thing that didn't identify with me. And this is a very long-winded way of saying that, like, you know, Cobra Kai and doing karate, I fell so in love with the sport that it completely changed my mind about it. And now I see working out as this thing that, like, I am nourishing this literal physical muscles, but this internal muscle that tells me, you know, these are the things that I can take from what I'm doing and adapt them to karate, and that, you know, or what, and then therefore on a bigger scale, what that means for my career or what that means for me as an individual and lessons that I'm taking away from things. And so these cycling classes, like, sometimes it feels so cheesy because it's just, they're like, you know, like, whatever your biggest, you know, hurdle is in life right now, put it right in front of the bike and you just ride right over it and you just ride up that hill. And I used to be the person who would just giggle at that, you know, but now I'm in it, and I really do. I close my eyes and I'm like,
that freaking that audition I did that I really wanted and it went terribly. I'm putting that right in front of this bike and I'm riding over it. And it seems silly, but like it's become such a point of center for me, I guess.
Oh, I 100% understand that. There's the physical value of something like that, but cycling in particular it's got like a therapeutic quality to
it. Yeah. And my favorite is that I have this one instructor that I go to on a regular basis.
Which cycle studio or
I've been going to SoulCycle in New York. There's this one instructor I have, and my favorite thing is like right before he turns the lights down and pumps up the music, he goes, all right, guys, let's get ready to ride bikes that go nowhere. And every time I'm like, okay, well, now I'm remembering the fact that I'm on a stationary bike, but you can close my eyes and I'm back. I'm traveling on this bike.
That's top priority for me. I've been doing the Peloton app. I need to get into a studio and be with that community and like see the instructor.
Yeah, that's the thing is I ended up getting a bike to have at home during the pandemic because I missed it. But then now going back to a studio, I was very nervous when I first did it, but now I've gone and my favorite instructor does Taylor Swift rides. And he does, he'll pick, two albums. And I'm not going to lie to you. I have one that I'm going to in a week and a half that is Hannah Montana versus High School Musical. And, I'm so stoked.
I want to go check that out. Oh, my God.
You're invited.
That's the exercise boost I need right now. Right? I'm, in a little bit of a lull about to go to TIFF where I will not work out for a week and a half. That might be, the jolt that I need to get back into.
I love it.
All right. One more to go.
Okay. This is fun now.
One. Okay. This is my favorite question. This is a would you rather question. It's very silly.
Okay.
Would you rather have to fake sneeze or fake vomit in a scene?
I don't know if this is a common answer, but fake vomit. First of all, it's fun. It's funny, in my opinion. I think it's funny in general. Puke doesn't bother me. There are certain bodily things that, I can't even joke about it because it's just the ick so bad. But puke doesn't bother me because my body, that is the number one thing that my body will do in response to anything. I'm stressed out. I'm tired. I'm hungry. I'm not hungry. I am, I'm sad. I'm whatever it is. I don't know why, but I just throw up. It's, the weirdest thing that I can't. And I found ways around it. I found things that, as soon as I start to feel it, I'm the upper lip sweat and the back of my neck is warm. Okay, we need to, and I'm, planning. But I've gotten so immune to it that, again, I find it funny. It's, how loud can I be when I fake vomit in this scene? But apparently, I actually found out that I'm a very quiet puker. I can throw up and nobody knows that I'm doing it.
One of the other questions on this list is IMDb trivia because I look at everyone.
Oh no!
You have nothing on your list, but I feel quiet puker is something that would be very appropriate for that particular page.
I had this whole conversation with somebody because one time I was in the back of an Uber and I was super nauseous and I was I was on the way to my second day of work on Cobra Kai ever and I was super nauseous and we were filming really far away from where I was living and so I was in the car for 45 minutes. And I had a Ziploc baggie with me.
Oh, no.
Anyway, nobody knew. So that's the point. That's the moral of the story. Fake vomit. Also, I had fake vomit that I had to throw up on Scandal. And it was pineapple juice mixed with oats. And it actually, was fine. I mean, the texture was weird, but it tasted kind of, pineapple juice. So it's, not that worst.
So I feel like part of the reason why that question came to be is because people always pick fake sneeze because they think it is not as gross. But, who can do a convincing fake sneeze?
They're hard to do. Right? I also found out that I'm a quiet sneezer. I'm a surprise sneezer. I was just told the other day, Tanner actually from
surprise.
Yes, Tanner from Cobra Kai actually.
Mean?
I don't know. I just I sneezed and he was like, "What the?" He's like, "What just happened?" And I was like, "I sneezed and it, why? Was it particularly weird?" And he was like, "There was no lead up." I was like, "What?" He's like, "There was no lead up. You don't anything." He's like, "You just sneeze out of nowhere. You just be," and then just continue what you're doing. I'm sorry, I completely derailed this.
I'm not going to stop thinking about the sneeze lead up. Now I can't wait until I have to sneeze again so I can do that.
Enjoy my club. We'll make a club if not.
All right. We have to get into the meat of the conversation. Yes, now, we did a lot of the beginning conversation questions the last time when we learned about your journey with signs and everything, but we got a couple new questions to squeeze in here. And the first thing I really wanted to ask you was, when you first decided that you wanted to be an actor and make this your career, what did the idea of making it look like? Was there any other actor or a type of role that if you got to do that thing, you would think I have made it in Hollywood?
I don't know. Here's the thing is I, especially at that age and then kind of throughout, I didn't think far ahead about it. I didn't think about what does this look like in 10, 20, 30 years? I was like, this is so cool and fun. And in the mentality of this is what I love to do and I want to keep doing it. And so by that point, like, now in this place that I'm at in my life, like, these little things are popping up that I'm not, and they're not little, but they're huge, and I'm so excited about it, but it just feels surreal because I didn't think far enough ahead to be like, what would it be like to see my face on a giant billboard on Sunset Boulevard? What would it be like to, you know, to hang out with Ralph Macchio and his kids and his wife, who are lovely, and, you know, watch an episode of an ABC show? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what would it be like to have these, like, crazy cool experiences? Or, like, you know, to get stopped on the street and have somebody be like, hey, I dress up as you for Halloween. Like, that's bizarre. It's so cool. And I didn't think far enough ahead to really wonder, but now I feel like I'm thinking about it in the sense of, like, what would it be to make it? Like, I don't know. Like, some of my favorite band members, like, followed me on Instagram and I lost it. I just about, like, I really sobbed.
What band?
Oh, no, I'm going to fully out myself now.
I'm curious.
Because I don't want them to think I'm crazy. But anyway, not that they are ever going to see this or think that I'm crazy. But anyway, like, band members from, like, I Love Sleeping with Sirens and Pierce the Veil and Motionless in White and, like, some of those band members. And it's just cool because it's, like, it's this thing of, like, okay, like, yeah, I forget that I'm a grown-up, I think is what it comes down to. Like, I've been doing this for so long and been the kid on set that, like, now being the grown-up, it's cool, it's awesome, and that I can have conversations with people in a different way of, like, this is what, you know, this art means to me and this is what art means to you, and we can kind of agree on this in this middle ground of what art is, and that's, I don't know, a cool new aspect to it.
Oh, I love but that I don't know, so much.
Maybe, like, I think maybe, like, going somewhere and having, like, an actual Halloween costume, like, at Spirit Halloween, because that's, like, I'm a Halloween nerd. So, like, the idea of, like, actually picking something up off of a rack and it being designed after a character I was in, maybe that.
I mean,
I've just decided that right now.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened with Cobra Kai. I mean, there has to be.
People get so creative with creating these. Yeah, there are geese, but, I mean, being that we have our Miyagi-Do geese, which kind of were only introduced in season 4, like the new ones that we have for the tournament. Those have such really specific details, and like the orange piping and the having the headband lotus on the sleeve and on the trim and stuff like that. So I feel like maybe if something like that came out, I'd be like really stoked.
I'll say I'm real stressed about the merch situation right now.
Really?
I don't know if I should keep buying things or stop. We'll get to it when we get to spoilers. Okay. Here's another, like, beginning question for you. So, again, when you first decided that you wanted to be an actor, what did you, and I guess your family, too, because I know that they were involved, what did you all think was, like, step one to becoming an actor? And now that you've gone through that process, would you advise that someone else out there who wants to become an actor take that same step, or did you find something else that was more helpful?
Interesting. I feel like things have changed so much, as cheesy as that sounds, in the 21 years I've been in this industry, that it's, like, you know, thinking about that moment for me then, it was, I think the first thing we were like, we got to get representation, you know? And so it was going out and finding, you know, an agent and a manager. And part of that became doing a showcase. Like when they just like literally like lined up all these kids and everybody memorized like a Burger King script. And then there was chairs set up with agents and managers and they sat there and they watched us and they go down the line and do it. And then they came up afterwards and they were like, yeah, you or not you or maybe you. And that was like step one at the time and like getting headshots. Now, I don't even know what to say when people ask me because it's amazingly changed so much. Like, the industry has changed so much. I mean, I joke about, like, the first headshots I got were black and white. And when I used to go into auditions, they would take a Polaroid of you as a day-of photo and staple it to your headshot and resume. And, like, that's bizarre because now everything is digital. And also, I don't go into rooms. It's all self-tapes. It's all, you know, over Zoom meetings. Like, it's changed so much that when people ask me, I'm like, The cool thing, though, is that it has created so many open doors and so much more accessibility for people all around the world. Like, I was from Arkansas. In order to act, I had to, my whole family uprooted their life for several months out of the year to take me to New York or to LA. And my siblings acted at the same time, but it was just this big, you know, movement that had to happen. And now it's like I can send in a tape from anywhere. So it's cool, you know?
It is cool.
It's a turning of tides.
It's crazy to think that, like, all those changes were in the works beforehand, but mm-hmm. given what we went through with the pandemic, it really, like, accelerated all of that to, like, a really crazy extent, and now it just feels like it's a completely different playing field, but an exciting one, too, mainly because of the accessibility of it all.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, let's get into some Cobra Kai, because I can't not. So you already brought this up, the idea of John, Josh, and Hayden kind of taking your own input on the character. What was the first time when you noticed that that was a possibility? Because I always find it really interesting, the journey or the evolution from being like, you know, a child actor where maybe you are being told what to do more and then becoming an adult on set where all of a sudden you realize, like, my creative input is being heard in a different way. So at what point in Cobra Kai did you sense that happening?
It's a very definitive moment. It was it was the finale of season one. We had, you know, the scene in which Miguel went to go hit Robbie at the beach party and accidentally knocks me out. Not literally, I joke, I say that jokingly, but no, but actually, I mean, I, you know, get hit to the floor and hit the ground and stand up and the, you are an asshole and my dad was right and all that. And like that argument for me, like walking away from that, I remember being like, this feels huge. Like this was so big for me as thinking about what 15-year-old me would have taken away from that scene and from that message. And I, you know, I loved how she did. She walked away. She said, you know what? No, I don't like what you're doing here. I don't like this person you're becoming. And even if it was a hot-headed, heat of the moment, it's a lot, you know, emotionally charged, doing that was important to me. But when we, you know, got to the end of the season, obviously, you know, everybody wanted the show to come back and we were super excited about it, but they didn't know, you know, what would be coming next and they were setting up kind of where those characters would go. And for one, I mean, I begged them all season long, can Sam do karate? And they were like, just hold off, just wait, just wait. And they gave me that moment at the end of season one. And I don't know how much of that was already pre-decided to set up for season two and how much of that was, you know, a conversation of knowing that I was super excited about the idea of karate. But I know definitively that the scene at the tournament where Sam and Miguel have a little moment when she says, like, when he says, you know, just watch what I do to your boyfriend out there or whatever, like, watch what I do to Robbie. You know, that was originally a very different scene where Sam kind of came up in tears and was and talked to Miguel and was like, I forgive you. And I had a big issue with that. And you know, and I see what they were doing with it, and it could have been a really cool version of it. But I just had this issue with the idea of the forgiveness happening that quickly without the conversation beforehand. I was like, I feel like we should see that conversation rather than having it be like an internal conversation for her. And the guys were like, yeah, well, come to us with what you think. So Sholo and I went over and sat down on the benches at the tournament with a pencil and the pages of the script and went through and we were like, well, what's a version of this that we could say? What feels like, you know, we could get this message across? And we went back to them with it, and obviously they took it and made it beautiful because that's what they do. But we got to have a moment where I got to, and that conversation started about 2 weeks before, and then it finished as we were about to shoot that scene at the tournament. And they were like, you know, are you happy with this? Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I got to have that moment of like having that conversation with what felt to me like making him own it a little more and getting to see that conversation for Samantha so that later when it, you know, when they did kind of reconcile and come back together, that it made more sense. And I loved that because they were like, yeah, we're not teenage girls. Sure. Like, how would you deal with this as a teenage girl? And that was the cool thing, was getting to like collaborate that way and be like, I like this version of Samantha. And they were like, we like that version of Samantha. Let's do it.
This just totally encapsulates why I think this show has become so special. It's because the actors really care and understand their characters. And then you have leaders in John, Josh, and Hayden who are, like, willing to listen. Like, they are exceptional writers their own. But I feel like you don't have a show with a special spark quite like this one has unless everybody, like, merges their visions together. And, like, that's what we see in the end product. Taking that idea but bringing it forward, whether it's season five or something more recent that Sam's gone through, is there any other situation where that happened? Because one of my favorite parts about Sam in particular is I really do like how they let her be a teenager in terms of how sometimes she'll act out of frustration. I feel like sometimes, you know, like the answer can present itself, but it's too simple and unrealistic to say, I'm going to take that answer and actually, like, wipe out that challenge from my board here, but we see her respond to like a million different things she's going through at all times. So with everything that goes on for her, has there ever been a point where she acts out of frustration or has a knee-jerk reaction to something and you had to talk it through with the three of them or maybe just like sit with it yourself for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that like initially I would come to them and be like, hey, why are we doing this? You know, why is she reacting like this? This is crazy. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, think about, and I'm like, yeah, no, you're right. Like if I think about, you know, why she would, you know, why she would have such an issue with Tori. And we kind of really talked about the, you know, and like, well, you know, can't she see that there's some aspect of humanity in all of us and there's something there to connect. And the more we would talk about it, I'd be like, oh my God, yeah, I could totally see how this has become, like, I do have those people or not even those people, those concepts, those things in my life that are such a big hang up that it seems like so simple to fix it and to just sit down and have a conversation, which is what we all kind of joke about, is like they just need like a mediator to like sit down and like talk all these karate problems out.
Or they need to talk it all through Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. Or Dojos, right? And Dragons.
Dojos and Dragons. Yeah. Don't mess that one up. Right. But no, I mean, I think there's plenty of those moments where, which is again, like why I really love how collaborative and open all of our creators and writers are, is they're willing to sit there and explain it, you know, and explain this is why we need this to happen and this is what we're trying to convey. And then I can be like, oh, I totally get it now and take that and do it. But I think there's really, like, been a lot of moments when it comes to the karate world for Sam where, you know, I get very protective over this idea of her being, I love being a part of a whole, but I also love that at for the most part, Sam's the sole female fighter over on that side of the world, and that's been incredibly important to me to make sure that that constantly is conveying strength, and they obviously are writing to that and creating this awesome storyline and these awesome characters where we get to do that, but it's always important, even if it's as small as, like, I don't want to, can I not stand in the back? I think I should stand, like, right here next to my opponent, or I should stand right here next to the people that I'm, you know, that I'm having this conversation with. And they're like, absolutely, you know? And so that's, we're getting to grow together, which is really cool and exciting.
I feel like that last question was the most long-winded thing I've ever said. And it's because, like, I knew exactly the beat in season 5 that I was getting at. So uh-huh. I'm just going to do it at this point. Spoiler warning for everybody out there who has not watched all of season 5 of Cobra Kai. This is it. We are going to talk spoilers. You push pause, and then you go watch the show, and then you come right back, and you press play. It's that easy. All right. So the moment that kind of inspired that question for me was, I believe it's the end of episode 8, beginning of episode 9, when Tori finally comes clean to Sam. And, like, that is an exact example of one of those moments where I'm like, oh, this is great. They could move on now and be friends. But Sam snaps at her. Uh-huh. Do you think that she would have had that same reaction had she not seen Miguel kiss another girl right before Tori came up to her?
I mean, I think it's human nature to have feelings like that. Like, I know, I, you know, and again, yes, she's a teenage girl, like you said, like, that's the reality of the situation. I don't think I would have had the zoom out lens ability to see how all of these actions play together. And also, I mean, you know, I totally can say there's better ways to handle so many of the situations that Sam handles, that anybody handles. We all learn that. That's human nature. We make mistakes. We learn from them. That's how you get better. Sometimes you are able to see somebody else make a mistake and learn from it, and hopefully not to make that mistake yourself. But a lot of times, at least for me, it's trial and error. And so also the fact that Tori knew that information and kept it to herself, I mean, it's definitely the heat of the moment of seeing Miguel with another girl right there in that second. But it's also, you know, coming out of having just had this fight at this dojo, Tori also bailed on it. And there's frustration there. You know, she had all this pent-up anger and this, I'm gonna, you know, Sam spent so much time gearing up for this showdown with her and being like, I'm gonna get to vindicate myself. I get to fix all these issues that I've seen falling apart in my family that Sam's carried around this guilt with, you know, like, I let my family down. My family's falling apart. They're fighting. All these big things are happening because I failed at that tournament. And I think all of that weight, you know, coming into this, okay, like, standing out there and training with Daniel and with Chosen and having that big moment, like, these are all these things that have huge, big, pent-up energy. And it's like when you gear yourself up for, like, a big argument with somebody and then you go to talk to them and they're like, yeah, I understand your point. You're like, well, well, good, but also I got to find something else to be mad about. Like, because I'm human and I have all this anger inside of me. So, yeah, it's like seeing Miguel struck the match, but the flame was already, you know, waiting to burn for Sam all day. And then realizing that Sam, that Tori knew this and didn't do anything about it. Again, not defending Sam's actions, but for me in that moment, what all of that came up for really comes down to so much more than being angry about a boy for me. It comes down, like, that's a broken heart and the moment that you realize you let somebody get away, and, like, the moment that it's too little too late, like, that pain on top of all of the other frustration and anger and even having won that fight, what that fight was supposed to mean versus what it ended up meaning for Sam, still very exciting and wonderful, but it was supposed to be so much more, what's the word I'm like, satisfying, you know? And so for me, it felt like, yeah, I could just explode into karate, especially if, like, if you have those kinds of skills and somebody pisses you off. Like, that's the thing that, like, I even do it jokingly all the time. Where, like, I'm constantly in between takes, like, punching and kicking my co-stars, and they're great. They know how to defend themselves, okay? First of all, they're super talented. But, you know, there's plenty of those moments where it's like, once you have that in you, it's like, that is, like, your go-to response. And especially with Tori, like, you know, the scars are still there.
The show is so good. It's like surface level entertainment and fun, but it's got those complex emotional beats and arcs, and that's what makes it stick with you and makes it really mean something, and it makes this show be able to, like, have a positive influence on some younger folks and older folks for that matter.
Yeah. I'm learning from Sam all the time.
learning from like everyone in the show all the time. In the next scene that Sam has with Tori, this might be like me overthinking things and it might be too specific, but were there any conversations in terms of like the blocking? Because it really caught my eye that Sam is always standing there as mm-hmm. they're having that conversation and not necessarily sharing the couch with her.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That was, we were very intentional with every piece of that was so thought out by, you know, our incredible writers, our directors. Everybody was so involved in kind of these conversations because to me especially, and I think to everybody there, this was such a big moment. It was kind of like the you know, a mini version of the respect that they obviously treat everything with. But I remember going into that episode 5, you know, battle between Johnny and Daniel in what was that, season 4, up on the sparring deck, there was such like a reverence about that, knowing that these were two people coming together that, you know, we're going to duke it out. That was like, this is what everybody's been waiting for. For me, it was that moment internally with Sam and Tori. There was a lot of intention with that. And for me, the staying standing is very much about, you know, staying in a defensive concept and, but also almost in a way it's offensive. And it kind of like is the first time we see this like vulnerable side of Tori coming out, where I feel like, you know, I got to have that in season 3 with Sam, where we got to really see, like, I got to really dig into the crying and the stuff like that. And obviously Tori has those incredible moments, but Sam doesn't get to see them. And it was kind of the first moment where I got to, I literally was talking to Peyton about this the other day, where it was almost like super emotional when they said action for the first time. And I walked in there and I looked down, and I saw her with the bloody knuckles and the ice on her hand, and her, like, she just looked up at me, and I had this moment of like, oh my God, something doesn't feel right. I shouldn't be here. Like, I felt like I was intruding on this very personal part of her life. And it did. It made me question, like, all this anger that I had toward her and all these, like, things that, like, you know, as a character. But as an actor, it was a really fun experience to get to have that, like, lack of leveling in the physicality, but this leveling of what felt like for Sam being like, okay, I can sort of start to let my guard down because I see her so with her guard down.
Very beautiful moment, and also I feel like that leaves room for them to grow, and that's something that I can't wait to see in future seasons. All right, I need to hit more like finale things. We obviously have to talk about the big finale set piece, and I could talk about it all day, but in an effort to get at least two things in that. So you were already talking a little bit about how, like, you weren't into the karate and the athleticism at the very beginning. So what is something, whether it's like a performance beat or a move you do in that particular set piece, that might make season 1 Mary go like, oh my God, I can't believe I'd be able to do that one day. But then also on the other hand, what is something that you saw one of your co-stars do in that particular fight that made you think like, wow, I've seen you crush it for so many seasons, but I never knew you were capable of that.
I think that's the cool thing, is we're all constantly hyping each other up in between takes. But I will say, like, think of specific karate moves in that final battle. For me, there was this, you know, this moment that, I mean, first of all, getting to fight with Kim Dae-eun, that was so, so cool and so awesome. And she was doubled by my stunt double as well, Selkie Hom. And so I got a couple of opportunities this season to actually fight with Selkie, because I also had the dream sequence, you know. And so there's a couple of moments where I'm used to fighting, like, her and I on the same side, and so fighting against her was, like, this very, like, trippy thing where I was like, oh, I've come a long way that I'm able to exchange blows with you and feel like I kind of maybe know a little bit of what I'm doing, you know, which was really exciting. But I think there was this particular moment with Peyton and I where we got to have these kind of double, we're standing, you know, side by side and against Kim, and have these, a couple of these double moments that, like, they're simple moves, but the doing it in synchronization was such an issue for me early on, where, like, I really would just drill it over and over and over again in my spare time to make sure that I, you know, nailed stuff. But there's also the fun of getting my leg up super high. You know, I can kick higher than I've been able to kick, which was super cool. And my moment that I really loved too was, like, both me and Miguel doing our little takedowns and then looking up, you good, cool. Like, and then going right back to karate. Like, to me, that's the epitome of, like, that's how I am in a relationship. Like, that's how I am, like, with somebody where I'm like, I do my own thing, you do your own thing. And then when we have those moments where we come together and we do something together, it's just like, oh, cool, you're good, great, awesome. Like, I'm very... I don't know, I think Shuttle calls me a bruh girl, but I think I'm just a little
what?
Bruh girl, I don't know. It's just like, I'm just a little, I think, independent in that way. So it was like a very fun moment where it was, and it really was like throwing him down, looking up and seeing Shuttle, and he's taller than he was, and he's grown up, and he's, and this moment of like all this drama that was going on for Sam and Miguel, and like having this moment of looking at him in the middle of a karate war and just being like, you good? You great? Cool. And like that was very awesome. Also, I mean, all of my co-stars are super freaking talented, but Devin, played by Una, she had some really sick kicks, you know, and I got to see that in 8 when I actually got to fight alongside her. I mean, she's freaking talented.
Yeah.
She is a powerhouse, and it was so exciting to get to see her over the arc of even just one season. Like, just kill it.
Una
like that.
And Dallas.
Yes.
Like, my God, I can't believe how scary Kenny got in a single, like, he was building towards that last season, but it was like, he's one of the smallest, like, youngest kids in this group, but all of a sudden he feels to me like he's towering over everyone and more threatening than anyone, and that's, like, one heck of a performance.
Wait till you talk to him anytime recently, his voice changed. I was like, he was like, hey, how's it going? I was like, excuse me, Dallas, who are you?
You kind of handed me one of my last questions here, because you were highlighting the relationship with Sam and Miguel. What was your first reaction when you read the script and you saw that it was time for them to exchange I love yous? Did you see something like that coming, or was that a surprise to you?
It was a surprise. I think, you know, and hopefully I'm not, you know, completely outing the everybody here, but I am pretty sure that is not originally how the season was going to end. I'm pretty sure they were going to end still broken up. And that they, I don't know what point that changed. It might have been very early on. It might have been before we even got, you know, fully there and it was in the writer's room. But there was a point at which they weren't going to have that moment, and the breakup was the breakup. And that was how it was talked to me. I didn't know, you know, we especially because we shot that stuff so early on in the season, and then we got to, I mean, that actually was, the I love you scene was the very last scene with dialogue I filmed from season 5. And it was, we rarely get to have that, you know, because we shoot so out of order to make everything happen.
I don't know how you guys do that.
We also typically shoot 2 episodes at the same time, so we're shooting episodes 1 and 2 at the same time, and then we're shooting 3 and 4. This season we did it a little different. We only shot 1 and 2 together, and then everything else was linear. But, you know, so rarely do we get to have a moment where we, you know, have a finale moment like that. I didn't know we were going to fully get there. The breakup scene was incredibly difficult for me. I actually had my one of our PAs standing by with Gatorade because I was dehydrated because of how hard I was crying. Like, in between takes, I was crying because I was just like, this is, it was so therapeutic and it was so cool and it was awesome to get to work with Shuttle and get to have a scene like that. But it was specifically for Sam and Miguel having this, like, oh my God, I don't know where it goes from here. And it felt so true to where we were at. You know, it was like, I don't know what's next for us. And so having that, like, come together moment at the very end, I didn't really see it coming, but it felt so good to get to have it. It felt so good to just, you know, post up on that car and just be leaning there talking to him. And again, it was one of those moments where I looked up at him and I was like, oh my God, dude, you've grown up. You know, like, I'm having this scene with you now. And I feel like I felt the same thing with Sam. I was like, holy crap, like, she's grown up. Like, this is a moment that she could be having a first I love you. And it feels so true and not like puppy love.
Yeah, that was the one thing about it. Because when it happened, like, I was caught off guard. I was very surprised. And then when I revisited the journey that they had gone through, in season 5 in particular, and how mature the themes and the ideas that they're dealing with are, It all makes, they had to go and they had to pursue their own paths and they had to come to understand what they really valued, and only then could they have a successful relationship together. So it made all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah. I love that moment. That's also such an important message for me, like, that I think I would have really loved to see, you know, on screen, and it's out there, but getting to see it with this character that, you know, settles a lot of her battles with her fists in a way, which is, we don't get to see a lot of women in media do, which, you know, maybe that's for the best, but she figures it out, you know. But it was very cool and special to have it be the words and not just a kiss and not just like a physical hug, a holding hands, you know, that came back together, but actually like sharing those kinds of big words felt very grounding.
I love it. All right, I'll end with this one, which is a little more theorizing, because I know the guys haven't written season 6, and there's going to be a period of waiting. It breaks my heart. I need more now. But given where Sam ends up at the end of season 5, what do you think her newest, greatest strength is? Something that'll help her as she moves forward, I'm assuming, in the tournament or, like, any other personal thing she's going through in her life. But then also, like, what is her next biggest weakness that she needs to tackle in order to be able to grow even more?
I think, you know, I say this somewhat jokingly, but it is serious in a sense for me, how true it feels for her, is that she kind of has the LaRusso, you know, I don't even know what to call it. It's kind of like a flu where you just, she is looking at the big picture, not maybe seeing it clearly, but she's worried about the sake of everybody all the time, you know. And I've been that person for so long where I, you know, I'm so worried about taking care of all the other people in my life that, you know, sometimes the things that fall through and I'm like, well, why isn't this working? It's like, because I didn't do any of the things that I needed to do for me, and that would have helped, you know. And I think that was cool, and that was an exciting moment for me in season 5 with Sam, was getting to have her make that decision. I need to do what I need to do for me. And like you said, having that be the exact thing that it needed to bring her back to the positive. I think, you know, Sam especially with the concept that we leave, you know, season five off in, is, again, everything's so hanging in the balance, and so what is next after that? I think for Sam, that could come down to needing to look after herself and what that means. And I should say, not necessarily being in a selfish way, not prioritizing herself, but really valuing what she needs and how that can help benefit the group at large. I think that could be interesting. And what that means as a fighter too, because like I said, she's been the, you know, solo girl over in her dojo for a while. So I think, you know, sharing that role could be interesting.
Looking forward to seeing the Sam-Tori relationship blossom more. But also, with that in mind, Sam should spend some time with Devin, because one of my favorite things about that character was, you know, her being influenced by the warring dojo situation happening around her, but she always prioritizes, like, what she needs and the path she wants to carve. I don't know, what you were just explaining, I'm like, maybe they should hang out more.
I think that's the cool thing. We all get to get put in a blender every year and, like, hit blend and then see what comes out. And I love the idea of what that means for every of these kids. I got to work with Griffin more with the season, which was so awesome. Good. He's so freaking talented. So he's so cool. And that's another thing. Like, all those, I'm learning from getting to now be the mentor part, which, you know, is a weird aspect I wasn't anticipating. But and maybe Sam hasn't fully owned it yet and doesn't fully know what she's doing yet, but there's a couple moments where I got to stand in front of him and be like, not my little brother. And, like, even that in itself is, like, that's a cool thing. I'm excited about what that would mean.
I got faith. She's going to take that title and run with it. I just know it. Okay, I could talk to you all day long. You're too easy to talk to. I am so happy that we got to do this in person. And you christened the dice tower.
I do. I feel so special.
This is the only time I haven't rolled a die. It is official. It is a very special thing now. Thank you so much. Congratulations on all of Cobra Kai right now, in particular. Season 5. Everyone out there, thank you for watching this edition of Collider Ladies Night. I hope you enjoy Cobra Kai. Hit the comments section, share some thoughts on this conversation and some of your favorite moments from season 5 as well.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.